Today, a conversation with Steve Keen, Part 3, Ecology and Energy, the New Horizon. Hello, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And this is the latest in our series with Steve Keen. So Steve, right at the end of the last episode, you started touching on the question of ecology and energy and how your focus is now beginning to switch. So what I want to know is what critical insight is driving this change of emphasis and change of focus? And what does it say about economics more broadly?
Well, the critical insight comes back to one other thing, as well as ignoring the role of money in capitalism. And this is a flaw of all schools of economics, not just the neoclassical. They've ignored the role of energy as well.
Right.
So if you go back to my favourite school of economists, that happens to be the group called the physiocrats back in France in the early 1700s through onto the late 1700s, and they argued that all wealth comes from land. And their argument was, I'm still trying to find somewhere where somebody says they say the free gift of nature. They don't say the free gift of the sun. But the basic idea is agriculture is productive because it gets the free gift of nature. And then agriculture produces a surplus for free, which is then transformed into other forms by manufacturing. So they saw the agricultural sector is productive and manufacturing is sterile. And the classic work for them is the Canet's Tableau Economique, and it actually literally says the productive sector and the sterile sector, and then the proprietor class in the middle. And Smith actually went to meet Canet and talk with him about economics and so on. He was over there tutoring some wealthy scion of the aristocracy, English aristocracy. And he took Richard Cantillon's argument. If you read Richard Cantillon's essays on production and read the first few paragraphs, Cantillon said all wealth comes from land, blah, blah, blah. And Smith said all wealth comes from labour, blah, blah, blah. And what you got out of that was Marx and the labour theory of value, which led to Marx turning classical economics against capitalism. The neoclassicals came along and said, oh, it's labour and capital together produce it. But they've all forgotten about the role of what the physiocrats called land, which fundamentally was the free energy coming in from the sun. So energy plays an essential role in economics, but no school of economics has properly included that. I got this, so that's been one of the areas I wanted to address for many, many years. And I was working with a guy called Bob Ayres, who's a leading economist, physicist, trying to bring energy into the models of production. And what was an interim step in Bob's work and applied when neoclassicals thought about it as well, they'd say, well, there's labour's an input and capital's an input and so is energy. And they had labour, capital and energy producing production together. That never satisfied me because if you set the coefficients right, they would say labour to one power, capital to another, energy to one minus the other two, so you get constant returns to scale. If you set your coefficients right, you could have zero for the coefficient of energy, mean energy falls out and still have production. So I wasn't happy about it. And walking through Bob's house one day, bathroom trip late at night, his house is full of statues. And this little brainwave came to me. A machine without energy is a statue. A worker without energy is a corpse. And I sat down and rapidly put it together. Energy is an input to labour, without which labour can't work. Energy is an input to machinery, without which machinery can't work. And I redefined the whole thing in 10 minutes flat, saying that energy is the essential source of production and so on. So having done that, when you say that labour is the input, what you get as an output is useful work.
Right.
Okay. So GDP is fundamentally useful work. But you put more energy in than you get as useful work out. The gap between the two is effectively entropy, the waste we contribute into the biosphere. The waste taking predominantly physical forms, of course, rather than energetic. It was just energy to radiate into outer space harmlessly. But we then dump this waste into the biosphere, one major form being carbon dioxide, but by no means the only form. So it's a way to integrate economics and ecology right at the hip, joined at the hip as they should be. Right. So that's what I'm working on now. And as part of doing that, I'm looking at what have the neoclassical economists done. And I literally held my head in shock when I saw what the morons had done. because they don't have data on what's going to happen with global warming. But they do have data on GDP by region, so gross state GSP, the gross state product, and they have data on temperature by state. They thought, oh, well, we can perform regressions on the two and apply, assume that the same data applies with global warming. Now, if you look at it, first of all, temperature is not a major determinant of GDP, but if you do it, you get this nice, very gradual, slightly positive and slightly negative relationship between GDP and temperature. And they found the ideal average temperature is about 12 degrees. So if you imagine you could move somewhere from where it's 10 degrees to where it's 12, like physically shift Boston, then you might get a slight boost to GDP. And if you go too far, if you move Boston to where Dallas is, you'll reduce GDP. And they thought, we can just assume the same thing for temperature over time. We assume that relationships over space hold over time, quote unquote, from Richard Toll. I thought, you absolute bloody morons, because that's like a local variation in what causes temperature. What we're looking about is a change in the amount of energy from the sun, which is absorbed by the biosphere and not reflected back. Mm. And we're talking about phenomenal levels of additional energy being retained by carbon dioxide, which will completely change the climate. And my vision here is I saw one person argue once that we live at the bottom of an ocean of atmosphere, okay? And the swirling of that is determined by the amount of energy we retain. Right. If you increase the amount of energy being retained, you change the swirling. You change the entire distribution of climate across the whole planet. And that energy change can be dramatic. So the energy range that we experience because of the sun is 33 degrees. The actual temperature of the planet without greenhouse gases is minus 18 degrees. The temperature with greenhouse gases is plus 15, roughly. So there's a 33 degree contribution. If you increase that to 34 or 35 or 36 degrees, you are getting an incredible amount of additional energy swirling over this atmosphere, which will completely change the distribution of climate. And they're pretending it's just like trivial. Yeah. And so consequently, they're saying that in the 1995 IPCC report written by people like Richard Toll and David Pearson, a few other mainstream economists, they literally said most of the models predict a 6% fall in GDP from a 10 degree increase in temperature. Now, the last time the globe was 10 degrees warmer than now was before the evolution of multicellular organisms.
Yeah.
It's completely outside our experience, and they're saying it's going to be like a walk in the park. And I think they're setting us up for the biggest catastrophe in the history of humanity. So I'm trying to discredit the entire profession over this. If this is what, let's assume, a can opener leads to, we should shut economics departments across the world, get them to teach remedial mathematics, starting with themselves, and let engineers take over, because engineers understand this sort of stuff. So economics has been a complete travesty. It led us blindfolded into the 2008 financial crisis. It's leading us blindfolded into ecological crisis as well. So that, to me, is far more important than Australian house prices.
Well, Steve, thank you for that. My takeout is that economists are part of the problem, not part of the solution. And next time, we're going to talk about data. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. See you again next time.